I think on the 31st of December, we had, the World Health Organization, their office in China, reporting to the world that, yeah, they first detected, COVID-19, as in coronavirus infection with someone. And then the evidence that was given to them actually showed that the person was exposed to this virus at the seafood, a particular seafood market in Wuhan. And then, like it has grown from just it being one person that got infected to now over 4.7 million people that are infected up to date. When we talk about those who have, recovered, it's 1.56 million people. But when we talk about those who are dead right now, we are talking about 298,000 people. Now, our discussion today is around the debate that has risen, that some are blaming some of these deaths and the infection rate in certain countries to capitalism. Some are also blaming it on socialism. Some are saying that if most countries were running the socialist model of governance, things would have been improved. Some are also saying that if, the capitalists were giving much way to also sort of explore what capitalism has, things would have improved. So yeah, I assembled some four brilliant people from totally different countries in here. So let me just introduce them to you. I have Mr. Egor Kozlov. His pronouns are he, his, and he's from Russia. And then he's very much interested in politics, political economy, and global trade. And then he was a master's, so he did his master's in globalization, trade, and industry from University of Manchester. So we move on to the next one, who is Mr. Fahad Al Huda. Great. So his pronouns are he, his, so don't hesitate calling him a he. And then he's from Bangladesh. And then he's a current Bachelor of Nursing student at University of Manchester, of Arts in Genetics. And he's also very much interested in healthcare, technology, and geopolitics. So, and I think you are a right person to also be here because all this whole thing has to do with health and technology as well. Yeah, so we'll move on to the next friend. Yeah, he's Mr. Tatanda Zuze. And then his pronoun is he, his, and then he's from Zimbabwe. He's also very much interested in politics, economics, and trade development. And he's also an alumnus of University of Manchester, and he did his master's in international development, but focused on globalization, trade, and industry. And then again, he's a blogger. He's a very known blogger as well. So just type Mr. Tetanda Zuze on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, you will find him. So our last but not least panelist is called Junior Usina. He's a proud Nigerian. He's also very much interested in business and development. And he's a current undergraduate student studying sociology, politics, and politics at University of Manchester. And I think he is also more or less leeching into the media system. So he has his own website that is operating, which is the Black Post Journal. He has actually taken a first step. He feels like, the media is very polarized right now. So he can also create a new channel for people to have their voice heard. So guys, you're all welcome to the show. The topic is just saying that is COVID-19 pandemic making a case for socialism or validating capitalism? But I feel like our audience would want to first understand exactly what socialism is. So Ego, if you can just take the lead to give us a background of as to what socialism is.
When we try to define what is socialism and what is capitalism, we need to understand that everything is quite complex. And it's not easy to, it's much harder than claiming someone to be capitalist or socialist, vice versa. So, in my opinion, what we usually label as socialism is a socialist state. Please do not confuse it with a social democratic society or welfare state you may see in Europe. Basically, a socialist state is a place like Venezuela or Cuba or North Korea or China. So they are also very different in their own organization of the political system. Most of them are one-party systems, but at the same time, they have a different regulation of the economy. While some may allow more of a capitalist way of running things, but still not a capitalist, a market-based way of developing an economy, whilst others will have a heavily state-controlled system like you have in North Korea. So, in my opinion, it is mostly a socialist state we're speaking about on this show. While we can go into theory and see that there are many other ways that the ideology itself, as developed by Marx or Schumpeter or Gramsci, those who are seen as the key developers of this system, actually had a very different view on it. Well, you have Lenin, who actually inspired a socialist state, while he was one of the leading followers of Marx of his time. Well, when it comes to the capitalist system, I usually tend to interpret it the way Adam Smith did back in the 18th century, which is the society where you have a lot of private individuals, basically who own a business, who own their and do their own thing. These may be small business owners, those who own restaurants, bars, tiny stores in your neighborhood, or maybe those who innovate and create new technologies, and they try to develop their systems by themselves rather than follow the plan as a state socialism aspires them to do. So basically, that's the key definition you have there. While you may see that both systems may have a lot of flaws, but we'll discuss them further on during the show, I believe. You're on mute, Kwame.
Yeah, so that's very wonderful. I think my next question is going to be that does it differ in terms of governance? So usually, let's say socialism or capitalism, does it have a particular vision that, let's say, it allows us to see how the strategy of achieving that vision could also be aligned? So, for example, we feel like in socialism, we are looking more at equity and equality in terms of, let's say, income and access to a whole lot of things. But when it comes into the strategy, usually what are some of the strategies that are being used to achieve some of these vision?
So, in my view, it's not the question of how you run things from the economic side, but how you organize your political system itself. So, in some cases, you may have a one-party state, which is quite popular among citizens of the country, and it may use its legitimacy and popularity to implement certain effective measures that may actually prove to be useful under these circumstances. But at the same time, you may have some state socialist system which are unpopular with the government, with citizens, and who may actually ruin things, who may actually not have any stimulus package whatsoever, who may not have any quarantine measures set. Basically, it all depends on the state of the government right now, rather than how they see they should run the government, how they aspire to run the government. So
Oh,
then
okay.
they did not follow the book, they did not follow the theory, they basically follow their own aspirations, how to save themselves, how to save their government.
Oh, okay. That's very interesting. Somebody has already sort of disagreed with what you just said on Facebook. So the person is saying that I disagree with your statement saying China is a socialist. I agree it's a one party state, but it's rather a mixed economy as many Chinese have the means of production. So I don't know whether anybody wants to respond or Ego would want to go ahead.
As I said, again, the definition is quite complex. You may have a lot of different classifications of what is socialism. As I said, some may have the definition of a market socialist system, and look at countries like Denmark, Sweden, Norway, or Finland, Northern Europe. But when you see how their economy is organized, it's basically a capitalist one. At the same time, in China, you have the different system, as I said earlier. So you have big businesses there, you have small shop owners, you have the systems implemented, but it was as a res the result of reforms they had before. So yeah, I guess the viewer is right that you cannot call the state a purely socialist. So maybe you can call it a corporatist state, but again, it's a bigger dig into theory.
But I'd say looking for labels in this is a moot point. I mean, as I think when Ugor started by explaining how theoretically they do have their setups and you can intellectualize over it, but then ultimately when it comes to actually running a country and being pragmatic about it, I guess that's what your viewer was trying to get at. And Igor is nodding away, so I'm that's essentially it. There's different flavors of it all, and as he was coming up with some of the names, I mean, it would be interesting to see how has there been any variation, success versus failure in the rates of COVID, and how these different systems have dealt with it.
Exactly. So I think that is going to be the next point that we'll be moving on to. So I think first we just wanted to gain a very fundamental understanding of what socialism is, what capitalism is, so that when we are defining them in the context of their response to the COVID-19, it places things in context. And it can also even let us understand whether things in theory are actually the same in practice. You know, yeah. So I think we can now move on to.
And you know, I believe it's too early to say whether someone is successful in fighting the pandemic, or someone is a failure. So right now, when we track the progress, we may see that someone is actually doing pretty bad as the number of cases is growing. But at the same time, maybe the number of cases is growing for some other reasons. So you have a very complex context in place.
So way too many confounding factors, aren't there?
Yeah,
I mean,
there will be statisticians mulling over this once we're on the other side. But I mean, we can go by and we can theorize and have a chat about what we can see now.
So I think that we'll just move on to now discussing how most countries have been responding to the whole COVID-19 situation, try to theorize their governance into whether we feel like they are capitalist or socialist, okay? And then just see how they've been responding to the COVID-19. So first, let's take United Kingdom as an example. As a capitalist economy or as a socialist economy? I think that's the first thing I want to get from all of us. From our own understanding, it doesn't need to lie with what mainstream definition is being given. And so maybe if I had, like, do you find United Kingdom as a socialist economy or a capitalist economy?
Well, I mean, it's a free market economy that we have here. I mean, I'd say, although there was the sort of the Beveridge report, it started the sort of social welfare state system in the 40s. We had the birth of the NHS in 48 with Bevan. And then as things have gone on, things have sort of evolved a bit more, promoting the free market system, I'd say here with that. And then as with the 2008 crisis that we had, things are tightening up. And so it seems it's the welfare side of it has been on the decline, as you can see, with the people who are affected, livelihoods and things,
Oh, okay. So, Junior, how would you define, the United Kingdom's governance? Do you find them as approaching things from the socialist perspective, or do you find them as a capitalist?
So, obviously, the United Kingdom response is more like a mist in terms of the way they responded to the virus. It's a little bit, obviously, the socialist in terms of offering incentives to people that have been left, for example, without job, or maybe they aren't working. Those that are on furlough, they've been paid by the government, grants to businesses, both small and big businesses. But in terms of their plans, it's not socialist, because their plan is basically to move on as soon as possible, not to risk the economy, as well to make sure that people get back to work as soon as possible and businesses do not lose too much. So they don't want to shrink the GDP that will already be affected by Brexit. So they don't want coronavirus to shrink in their GDP further. But obviously, they are still aware that by any means, by whatever they do, any country GDP is going to be affected by COVID-19. So they are trying to reduce the impact as much as possible. So that makes them a little bit, and that is the capitalism response from the UK. But in terms of tackling the other social issues, in terms of affecting people's life, they are very open. So the welfare of the UK system is very big. So they have the opportunity to provide those incentives to people. So yeah, it's missed. I would say that it's missed.
Oh, okay. So I think I'll go back to Tatanda. Like, what's your view on this? Maybe let me place in the context of Zimbabwe. Like, do you find Zimbabwe as a capitalist or a socialist economy? And then how are they applying these principles in terms of their response to COVID-19?
Okay, so I think with context to Zimbabwe is that I think that's what Zimbabwe is doing is most likely what other African, most the majority of African countries have tried to implement, because we are coming from a background where we are former colonies. And so the majority of the countries are in a process where they are trying to equalize in terms of maybe the inequalities that were created by a colonial system. So you have the government basically trying to be in charge of distributing resources, of managing the critical sectors of the economy, be it the healthcare, the security, and transport services, and so forth. So in Zimbabwe, what we have basically is the government is basically in charge of the majority of the sectors of the economy, be it in mining, be it in the health sector, transport, you name it. The government is basically in charge of that. So we have the private sector, but the private sector works directly, reporting to the government. The government determines the environment in which the private sector ought to operate. So when we then bring it to the COVID-19 situation, we rarely had like a lot of private sector participation in the health sector. So that then created a challenge where when the government is failing to provide resources to handle the situation, they don't have the support of the private sector. Unlike in South Africa, where I would say less than 10-20% of the tests of COVID-19 were done by private institutions, private health institutions, and then 20% by public institutions. So you notice that the participation of the private sector in tackling COVID-19 was more noticeable in South Africa, where you have a relatively free market kind of economic setup. And but in Zimbabwe, yeah, basically it's the government that is in charge of doing the most in terms of youth delivery or youth services provision. And but for now, I think the good part is that Zimbabwe has been cushioned from a lot of COVID-19 cases because of, I'd say, is it a strategic position, or I don't know what you can call it. Because if you notice, the majority of the flights that come into Zimbabwe, they go through South Africa and some of them through Zambia, or they connect through Ethiopia. We rarely have direct flights from Europe. So that played a huge role in reducing the number of COVID-19 cases that Zimbabwe had to tackle with. And I think we are roughly under 20 confirmed cases, 30 probably. So we haven't had much in terms of COVID-19 cases. So I think on the side of the government, that's a good thing, because they don't have much really resources to really tackle the situation. If we had more than, let's say, 200, 300 cases of COVID-19, it was going to be a very, very different situation. But the good part is that we are a landlocked country, and most of the people that come in Zimbabwe, they come through other countries. So you see, they come through South Africa, come through Zambia. So if Zambia really has rigid testing systems, then chances are high that some of the cases will be detected before they get to Zimbabwe. And also, if South Africa, which is the majority receiver of flights in the Southern African part, is closing down the airport, it also means that the number of flights that will come through Zimbabwe is also limited. So that then is enabled Zimbabwe to be cushioned from COVID-19 cases. But in terms of how we handle our health systems, the government basically is in charge of that.
So I think you've given a very good example of what we've been talking about. The fact that, like, in South Africa, you have the private sector playing a crucial role in the control of COVID-19, and in Zimbabwe, it's more of the government, and then they are not gaining too much support from the private sector. Maybe we'll come back to gain much more details from that section. So, Ego, how about Russia? Like, so how do you define Russia's governance, and then how do you find it sort of reflecting in their response to COVID-19?
As one of the funniest contemporary dictators once said, my country was standing at the edge of the cliff and I helped it to make a step forward. I believe Russia government did the very same thing. So the quote is from the leader of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, and I guess these two cases are very similar. In Russia, we didn't have any quarantine whatsoever. We didn't have any stimulus package. Businesses were left behind. So basically, we had to survive. And when they don't even give $200 a month to anyone who lives or resides in the country, while they have more than $600 billion in their national reserve. So the thing is that basically nothing happens. President Putin recently announced that we no longer have quarantines in the country, while Russia hit the second place in the number of registered cases. So you see that nothing happens. No stimulus package whatsoever, or even if there is a program, if you want to get some money from the government to help your business, you need to enter the bureaucratic hell of finding 33 types of different documents confirming that you haven't fired anyone during the crisis. You're in dire need of financial resources. So basically, no one can accomplish this. No one can have that audit in the time of the pandemic. And now you see people simply left behind. At the same time, the same thing with statistics. We don't know how clear it is. We don't know how many cases there really are. And so it's a very big mess.
Big mess there.
You don't understand what happens.
Yeah, so I actually like, it's not like I like exactly what is going on in Russia. I just, context I given, it really fits the whole discussion that we are having in terms of even first defining the ideology that Russia stands for, and then comparing it to the sort of package that you're giving. But we'll come back to that. So we'll go on to Fahad. Like, can you also give us a background as to, you know, Bangladesh, like how they're also responding to it, and then from the governance side, which ideology they subscribe to?
Bangladesh has their first sort of reaction to it all was towards the end of January when they started a few repatriation flights of their sort of students and researchers and migrant workers they had around in the Wuhan area. Since then, they've tried their version of sort of lockdown measures as much as they could, but obviously their testing capacity is very minimal, and they're also confounded by a highly dense population in a low economically developed country with this high levels of urban migration, internal migration in towards the cities. So I mean, it's all fine and dandy for us to be in lockdown here. How do you lock down a sort of densely packed, for want of a better phrase, a shanty town that you have there? And it's also bringing out the class divide that you have in Bangladesh. The well-off are managing to lock down quite well. And it's around the subcontinental area as well. It's a similar it's a similar effect. It's the poor who are being affected down more by this sort of loss in production. This loss in production, loss in economic output, there's fewer jobs. These people, they're the ones who are worst affected. And then we've had, as well, for the past few years, there's been the Rohingya humanitarian crisis going around as well, with the refugees coming from Myanmar. Now that has been aggravated even more. So you think about the sort of cities where migrant workers are living in around Dhaka mainly, and Rangpur, the main cities. Now you think in a refugee camp, what capacity? Those have been on full lockdown since about mid-February. So the issues over there is getting worse. And an interesting thing that I find here is they're using what they call the Digital Security Act that they brought out here to lock down on what they deem to be anti-COVID rhetoric or anti-pandemic rhetoric. Now, there are questions about where they're using those powers from, on whom they're using those powers. So, I mean, it's just what happens. I mean, we had the sort of snooper's charter here. I mean, similarly, even over there, you've got the use of security threat to try and lock down, another form of locking down on your political opposition. In summary, what I say is, it's Bangladesh is doing the best it can within its financial recourse.
I think that's really good.
But I found Igor's point quite interesting. I just wanted to segue onto what Igor was saying about the fact that there were no stipends or things like that, or support given from the government there. But that seems, it ties in very nicely with what you were saying about theory and practice. The theoretical perspective of socialism would be that the state meets your basic needs, which is ironically what's happening in a lot of these Western countries, even though it's a sort of short-term affair to try and deal with the short-term effects of locking down and having less economic output until we can think about the medium-term plan. But I found that response that Igor was saying quite ironic.
Yeah, exactly. So I think when you take Ghana, for example, I'm also from Ghana. When you take Ghana as an example, he respond as early as we'd have expected it. And you know, we would critique the government from that perspective, especially when you realize that somebody just died. And you feel like, okay, no, you should have done this, you should have done that, like, you know, as citizens. But then Ghana started the quarantine strategy. So I think they used 2 days to announce to everybody coming to Ghana that if you know you'll be coming to Ghana, you have these two dates to come. And when you come, you're going to be quarantined. And afterwards, there is nobody that is going to be given a chance to come to Ghana. And so, yeah, so we were able to use that quarantine measures to stop flights coming in at all. And then every other person that came in actually was put in hotels for free for 14 days, you know, they were fed for free and everything. Take Ghana, I wouldn't say Ghana is a mixed economy. Ghana isn't a socialist economy as well, because the government do not have a lot of state enterprises. So we almost do not have state enterprises, with the exception of the Ghana Water Company that provides water to us. I think when it comes to electricity, I think we have some control over electricity as well. So those are the two things that you could say our economy has much, how do I put it? Like, we have much control over. And then we have one bank, like every other sort of country would have, like a commercial bank, and we also own the Bank of Ghana as well. So Ghana isn't really a country that has a lot of the state controlling most aspects of the economy. And so I don't find it a socialist. I find it more of like 70-80% capitalist. So I think when it comes to the response, what the government, they weren't able to give any stimulus package in terms of cash to poor people, because I mean, Ghana isn't too much of a rich country, so they couldn't. But what they were able to do was that water was actually, we nationalized, because water is like a national utility controlled by the government, we've made it free for every citizen. So every citizen from now till I think the next 3 months have free access to water. And then when it comes to electricity too, you have 50%, you've cut down the cost by 50%. You know, so I think these were some of the things that our government was able to do. But then looking at our discussion right now, you realize that some countries were able to give some packages to sort of control the effect of COVID-19. Okay, and it was a package that was given like from the government's point of view. So then I was just wondering, like, you know, Ghana isn't a socialist economy. So like, why didn't they allow the markets to work? Like maybe COVID-19 is also one of those external factors that could affect a market and the market could fix it. Like the way our economists would put it, like you take Russia. Russia is supposed to be more of a socialist economy. I don't know if Ego would clarify on that. And I am wondering why they rather weren't getting more of the stimulus packages.
So if you speak of Russia, you cannot call it either socialist or capitalist country. So I believe that it's an ideal case for state capitalism. So if you want to find, it's the best place you can go. Basically, you have the political elite controlling the key resources of the country, starting mm-hmm. from the oil and gas sector up to telecom. Basically, every major business in Russia is somewhat affiliated to the government, elite, and basically the Kremlin. And in Russia, the government itself is subservient to the Kremlin, which is not officially the governing force. So you see a powerful president and his unofficial state bodies are actually the ones who govern the country. No parliament, no government, nothing is as influential as Kremlin right now. But the crisis started a very interesting dynamic. You started seeing that mayors and governors of cities started to become more influential, prime minister becoming more influential as well. And I believe that you cannot label Russia whether it's a capitalist or socialist economy. Mm. So it's basically a patrimonial state.
Yeah. Okay, so with the current view of our inability to view it as either like a socialist or a capitalist, however you view it, is their response at the moment consistent with whichever ideology that they subscribe to at the moment? Is it consistent with it?
Yeah, it's consistent with the ideology I label the politics of survival. Mm-hmm. The political regime wants to save all the money for itself so that they can use this money while they trying to oppress those who protest them, those who question them, at the same time keeping the elite loyal to the president and to those who are very close associates to him. So the thing is that basically the money is used by the elite and no one else.
Okay.
I cannot say that it's a capitalist economy.
Capitalist, yeah.
So,
but then I'll just
it's not a capitalist economy at all. Mm-hmm. For the reason that any capitalist economy implies that you at least have these market dynamics, you mm-hmm. have the thing they call, as you called it, the market will fix itself. Nothing similar you can see in Russia. For the reason that the entire ideology of the system is that we need to save this money to save our lives. And they believe that this money is the money of the Kremlin and no one else. They believe that this money is used to destroy even the market forces you may think they're supporting from the outside. They're not doing it at all. They're letting every business die, every competitor die. And just trying to monopolize everything without using the market, without using it.
So I think that I'll come back to you again in relation to still trying to situate the kind of response into you know, it being more of a capitalist sort of response, especially when no stimulus package is being given and people are just supposed to survive within that whole environment. I would argue that that can be situated more into the capitalist section. But maybe right. I'll come back to you
just,
on
just
that.
One more thing. Maybe it will help you to make everything clearer. So the thing is that the capitalist ideology, or maybe a libertarian one, says that the state should not interfere into the life of the society, as the society will run the market and everything will be fine. What happens in Russia is that the state does not help anyone, but at the same time create a surveillance apparatus, trying to repress and fine everyone who violates their own laws of quarantine. So basically, they're trying to oppress everyone who tries to go out in the street, mm-hmm. Who trying to post some fake information as they see it, as they deem it fake, mm-hmm. while not giving anyone anything at all. So basically, it's a regime of political survival. And I cannot say that they're driven by any economic ideology whatsoever.
Ideology. Okay. Yeah, great. So we'll move on to Junior. Junior, you have some information on Nigeria, like how is Nigeria responding to this? And how do you define Nigeria in terms of ideological perspective?
The Nigeria response, obviously, you asked me about the Nigeria model of economy. We are very much more free market economy. So businesses decide everything. So we are one of the countries which has a very high rate of business startup. So startup in Nigeria is every second. Like, you can have thousands of startups every second. So we are people that like business, and it is known around the world. We like to do business and trade. So we are very known for trade. So the Nigeria health system, when it comes to epidemics and when it comes to response to situation like this, is quite good. So we surprised the world during Ebola outbreak, and we have surprised the world again on COVID-19. So what happened period to COVID-19 in Nigeria is that in the north, obviously everybody know the situation about Boko Haram and the disruption they have created. So before COVID-19, we have more than 2 million people that were dispersed in the north without home. And so the government was able to respond to this promptly by making sure that these people were able to get, obviously, in terms of hygiene, in terms of food stock. So we're talking about the government was able to install more than 7,500 detentions in terms of places where people can wash their hands, sanitize themselves. So just only between March and April, more than 65,000 people were able to receive distribution of food and other things from the government. And obviously another 417,000 displaced people were able to benefit from the government access to hygiene and water. And then there was some kind of a project, urban project as well, that the government was able to put in place in Maiduguri. This is a very north region. That is one of those regions where the Boko Haram operate in the north in Nigeria. So, which benefited more than 90,000 people. Obviously, we are talking about 3 million people. Before coronavirus, we are talking about more than 3 million people dispersed. So definitely the government is doing their best to respond to this situation. They were able to publish guidelines in different language, because obviously in Nigeria, we speak a lot of different language. So they were able to publish guidelines in local language and in English. So then you have the response from the south. So now I've spoken about the response in the north, which obviously was a very difficult one. Whereas in the south and in other region, the response obviously impacted a lot of businesses, because this is the region where you have a lot of traders, a lot of small businesses, and it's impacted people's life in terms of people that doesn't live on the state. So obviously we are not like the Western developed country whereby there is a very big system of welfare benefit. So we don't have something like that. So what the government was able to put in place is for elderly people and for traders. So, you know Africa, Kwame, you know, you have a lot of traders, you have a lot of market traders.
Yeah.
So these people that live on market trade, so that was not able to obviously access the market because everything was locked down and Lagos was on lockdown. So imagine Lagos being on lockdown. So this is a city of millions of people. It's like, it's going to impact a lot of people's livelihood. So the government was able to give some incentives. So it was giving money to elderly people. I can't really say the amount of number of the people that receive these benefits, this money. But obviously the government tried to respond in that same way. So quarantine places were set up for people to be quarantined. So what they try to do is that they try to separate people that have shown symptoms from family members. So if anybody show symptoms, immediately they go to quarantine places that the government put in place. So that is how the Nigerian government is dealing with the coronavirus. And obviously we Nigerian people are very, very noisy, and people still gonna complain. People are still going to criticize the government because we are a massive country. The population is a lot. And in terms of proportion between people, population, and how big our government is very small. So the government can't respond to everybody because Nigeria is a very free capitalist country. The government has limited control over people. It's not like in the UK or in other country in the Europe whereby government dictates everything about people on people's life. So in Nigeria, okay, people are very much free to do whatever they want. And there has been some cases of police and the military brutality, obviously in terms of trying to control people. So there has been some people that have posted online on Facebook where there has been some episode of police and military, obviously being very, a little bit brutal to the citizen. So yeah, that is a little bit more all the information that I've been able to gather.
Yeah, that's really good. And then I think that, so like Tatenda gave a very good point around how Zimbabwe's response is more centered around the government. Bangladesh also is like, it's kind of centered around the government, but then they are unable to give the sort of package that they would have wanted to give. But because of the financial situation of Bangladesh, the same in Ghana, like I explained. But then like Russia is quite different in terms of the stimulus package that is being given, you know, like Nigeria too has been sort of explained. So I think that what one thing that runs through is the kind of package, the fact that it's given by governments, okay, which makes people argue that it's more leaning towards a socialist sort of approach. So the question is that should a particular government adopt a particular ideology that could help them in sort of attending to pandemics like this? Should a government's adoption of a particular ideology be dependent on how it can help them deal with certain pandemics? Because then if something doesn't happen really, of what use would the ideology be? So would you agree to that? Like, so maybe I'll start with Fahad.
I think the key thing we need to remember is, although it does seem like right now with all some of these financial packages that have been coming in and stuff that, oh no, the scary big government is back, it's exerting control, this is a gut response to the situation. It doesn't necessarily validate or cancel out the status quo system of government or an alternative. All we know from the sort of public health officials is that the clearest way we can buy some time and reduce the pressure on the health services is by locking down. What's the side effect of locking down? Reduced production, reduced livelihood. People who are surviving from hand to mouth on the gig economy that's that that is prevalent in a lot of Western countries. How do we give those people an opportunity to meet their basic needs? So I mean, Igor used the term earlier about it's survival. So I'd say it is survival of us as a society, as a community, but from a political perspective, whoever the incumbent party is, nobody wants to be responsible for, nobody wants to have the label. No government wants to have the label of, oh, our country went to trash because of our party. No, everybody wants to be at the end of this flying the flag of, oh, we survived COVID, our party did. So in that sense of survival, I know from Igor's example was from a sort of autocratic system, but even in democracies, this is all just a plaster while we buy some time and see how things unfold. Because I think, as we were saying earlier, it's too early for us to decide what is the best way to deal with this. I mean, it could be argued we could have learned from MERS in 2012 and from SARS in 2003, but those were on a continental level. This now we're on a global level. It's a whole new territory. And so I think the only point that I wanted to stress here was it's important to know that this is a short-term measure. And what's going to come out of it? Well, this is what I'd love to hear from you experts on. Like, where can we go from here?
Yeah, so I think that my question coming from that is that, you know, like mostly when most countries were deciding the stimulus package, for example, like a big intervention from the minority trying to determine how the package should be, because the minority in there is more of a Democrats, which lean towards socialists, who sort of subscribe to the socialist way of governance. And then they were actually even talking about how maybe this particular group is disadvantaged and how we should increase the money and all those kind of things. So I think it was creating that impression that if they were the ones in power, for example, and with their socialist lineage, it would have been much more easier for them to respond to it, because they believe in taking care of the people and not allowing, you know, people to use their strength. Don't you still think that COVID is still trying to give a ticket to certain parties that align with certain ideologies?
All I was trying to get at was it was sort of if we were to go back to defining things, even though socialism sounds more compassionate, I think Igor illustrated a few of the issues that we get from it in terms of weakening the engine of economic growth. Because I mean, there was a saying, I think Igor might corroborate, about they pretend to pay us, we pretend to work. So then where's the efficiency? Where's the innovation? Yeah. Where's the competition? We sort of need an element of that. And mind, I am sitting on the, I'm trying to draw the positives of both. So even though this introduction of increased welfare policies might, some parties might want to use this as a foundation to justify their stance, I would argue that it doesn't necessarily counter these the issues with socialism when it comes to practice. I think Igor's back, so I want to hear his perspective as well. I think you do as well.
Yeah, I'm back. Just some issues with Zoom, I believe. So the entire idea of this stability was that this political system and the ruling party stays intact, that it keeps its grip on power and everything is stable. There are no reforms, there are no changes. And it's important to understand the context that in the a lot of people suffered during the transition from the state-led economic system towards a market-based economic system. And the period of 1990s has become a myth in Russia as a period of complete devastation of the country, of its complete weakness. And the entire idea of this stability was about that we came here, we live off using high oil prices, and that's how we should leave the system. That's why we shouldn't let anyone who thinks otherwise in the government. We shouldn't let any other economic actor to innovate and to invest. And that's how stability became the thing of the Russian political system.
Yeah, so I think the question I was asking was that when you take the United States, for example, when they were coming up with their stimulus pack, the Democrats, who are people whose ideology is more towards socialism, and then how they were more of championing the government giving out these packages to poor people, how they were even saying that the monies are not enough, and all those kind of things. So I was just trying to say that, don't you think COVID-19 is sort of giving a ticket for certain parties with certain ideologies to sort of use it to sort of, you know, campaign for themselves, that like if you were the ones in charge, you realize that in your dying moment, we would have responded in this particular way?
So in my view, the current crisis helps those who are the most rational ones, those who believe in science, those who do not question the reports of experts, I mean, doctors, professionals, economists, those who can provide these short-term recipes to success, those who know how to contain the spread of the disease, those who know how to do it right. So it's not about ideology, and it's not about things. It's about very simple things, very rational ones. If you are able to do everything logically and understand how you should act, then you should be fine. And you see this thing happening all around the world. My favorite case is Greece. So in Greece, you have a rightist party in power. Basically, the one who is very similar in ideological terms to the Republican Party in the US. But they, from the start of the pandemic, the government called doctors and experts on how to use the limited resources of the Greek economy to contain the virus. And they managed to do pretty well. They had only 3,000 confirmed cases. And from this week on, they have started their process of easing the lockdown. So I guess it's not a part of whether political or economical ideology.
I understand. I understand what you're saying. That isn't how things are supposed to be. But I'm talking about like in practice, that is how things usually go.
No. That's the thing in practice. As you see the case of Greece, where you have a right wing party ruling, which managed to do a good job in containing the virus. So, and you may see that there are many places all around the world where you have different parties with different ideologies actually proving to be successful. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you may have some left-wing governments, socialist governments, which did poorly in facing the crisis.
I was just going to say that, like, maybe I'll ask, maybe Gina could come in here. I want to also find out, you know, in the United Kingdom, the importation of ventilators, for example, became another concern where the government was still charging, you know, some VAT and some taxes on the ventilators that were imported. And they were making the argument that when they imported, they could sort of request for a refund for it. But then we had the opposition in here, and specifically people like Piers Morgan even arguing that, no, this is a pandemic, like, you know, from the emotional side, talk about the fact that it's a pandemic and you should just take all those incentives out. I'm just asking Junior, how do you find capitalism and socialism working really hand in hand, especially in the United Kingdom?
So in terms of, obviously, I disagree with Igor when he was saying that COVID-19 has meant that there is no political polarization, whether you are left or right, whether it's capitalism or socialism, in terms of response, which is not true, because some governments like the USA, the UK, and other countries have proved that wrong, because most of the countries' response has reflected the kind of political ideology that government is practicing.
Yep.
You mentioned, for example, the UK not removing the VAT for ventilators. The USA basically want to go back to normal life, although the numbers are contradicting that. Obviously, then some people might obviously brought in the Swedish response. Yeah, Swedish has mentioned it over time and over time again that they are not a capitalist, they are not a socialist a type of system. So this is another way to prove their point that Sweden is a very free market economy and is very open to any kind of things like obviously keeping the business running. So the in terms of the UK, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, they have to limit the impact of Brexit. They already have Brexit that is going to strengthen the economy. And then you have COVID-19 putting another wave. So the way the government wanted to limit this, recession was by sticking to their ideology, which means the type of government they are. In other life, I have mentioned before that they won't change. The UK government is pro-infrastructure and pro-economy. So they kept construction workers as essential workers to keep working. I don't know, how can you practice social distancing by doing construction job? They wanted the HS2 infrastructure to continue even during the pandemic. From recent guideline was, even from day one, and I think they were just trying to confuse people, was if you can't work from home, you should still go to work. Well, except you are those that are working in shops or maybe restaurants, pubs or hotel, or maybe in the airport. If you're doing any other type of job and you can't work from home, you can still go back. You can still go to work. Obviously, they did have a good selection of essential workers. So you are then continuing on the UK. So you could see that if it was, as you said before, if it was a socialist or maybe pro-social system government, their response could have been a very more kind of, let's get everybody home. The government is going to pay for everything. I think that is what you were thinking about, Kwame, if it was a more leaning socialist government. But other country like China, you see, it's very authoritarian country. The response was very authoritarian. Even the same Nigeria is why the response was very more like a social response, because the current government, APC, is a kind of leaning west, leaning left government. It's a socialist government. It's not a capitalist or a pro-economic government. So I think that obviously we contrast what Igor was saying earlier, that COVID-19 doesn't has any kind of, does not discriminate between capitalism or socialism or the current government ideology. It does discriminate.
So we'll get Igor to respond to that. So as he's responding to my next question, it's just going to be that, so, like, can we say that the stimulus package that the United Kingdom gave, did they give it just to allow, you know, capitalism to function, you know? Because I think most of the packages were going more to, you know, oh, if you're a businessman and you are planning to lay off your staff, no, we do not want you to lay them off. We are giving you this furlough, package to still allow those staff to hang on and all that. So Ego will respond to you, but I just want the rest of us to be thinking about that so that maybe we'll give our perspective on it. So do you think they gave it out just to sort of still re-emphasize the need for capitalism to be there, for businesses to function? Or exactly, they just gave it out because they felt that, you know, we just care and we are giving it out. So, but Ego, respond then, maybe the rest will
continue. Yeah, so I think that this rational response to the crisis, no matter whether you are rightist or leftist government, is a part of an ideology itself. So I see that there is truly an ideological line between those who fail and those who succeed. So let's say the Republican Party is right now is known as an anti-science party, and you see the quite a poor response from the US government to the crisis. Well, at the same time, you see the rightist government of Greece, which started to stick to science and it succeeded in fighting the virus. The same with the Czech Republic. If you look at the Baltic states, you have both rightist and leftist governments there. They also did pretty well. You have the centrist coalition in Germany. They managed to ramp up the number of tests and they are starting to ease their lockdown. So the thing is that these governments may have different economic ideologies. One's maybe more of a state-led economic system, faith. Others are often more pro-market side of it. Well, what unites those who manage to fight the crisis is their attitude to science, their trust in science. So I believe that the trust in science is not the thing that identifies whether you stand as a socialist or a capitalist.
But then I think
economically wise.
But then I think that when you speaking on science, it literally has lineage of science leaning towards more of the left, because like when you look at the Democrats, they talk more about the science says that when you look at the Labour government here in the UK, they also talk about the science says that. So I want to now come back to Fahad, and why do you think it's leaning towards a particular political ideology? So for example,
I wouldn't say science leans towards any political ideology. Science goes by where the facts are, where the evidence is, where is the evidence that you can replicate. Now, whether a political party wants to adopt science in its rhetoric, that's a different matter. And I would go as far as in every evening coronavirus briefing, the one line that they always come out with is, we are following the science.
That's science, yeah.
They actually are. But that's the current incumbent Conservative Party who is saying that. So people will follow the experts if it suits their political intent. If it doesn't, then they're liars and they are phony geeks with bad haircuts. Let them go aside.
Tatanda, you're coming back. I just want to say that the reason why I was saying there's some sort of lineage mm-hmm. to some political ideology is because, mm-hmm. let's say when you pick up issues like, we are not going into climate change, but what I'm just saying is that when you pick up the issues of climate change, for example, it is more talked about by leftist sort of government that believe more in socialism. And then mostly when you're talking about it, they refer you to science. Okay, they talk about science at the moment. Like, this is what science is saying. I don't know whether you agree to me. So it's making me feel that people are now believing more in science. People are not talking about science because it helps them to pursue a particular ideological narratives that they want to push in. And maybe because of the same sort of politics, then current governments would also want to just rely on it, and which is not helping in the UK at the moment, where it is such that nothing gets done.
What I would say on the other hand, what the science proves, the single best way to deal with this kind of viral epidemic, with this kind of R level in the absence of vaccine or treatment, is full hardcore lockdown. That is what, if you look at the figures and the case prevalence rates, what they did in Wuhan, that's the single best way of dealing with it. That's based on the evidence of case transmission, of deaths, of severity of cases, and as I said, the R number. Now, no political government in our side of the world is going to agree to that. That's not so, as a society, we aren't going to be compliant with that. I mean, I don't like doing this, but a line that Boris said once, our inalienable right to go to the pub. That is, I just found it funny because he comes up with some quips. It's not my political leaning, but the point is, as a Western society, we wouldn't tolerate that level of immediate hardcore lockdown. That's why I think Junior was mentioning how we were easing into this. The thing is, if you go hardcore lockdown too soon, then you can't predict. Sort of social compliance is a different thing is a difficult thing to predict, and arguably people would get. I mean, even over the last week, you saw people going around having house parties and things like that, and that was only after what, 6 or 7 weeks of lockdown. So, according to the science, the key thing, if you want to bring that catchphrase in, the key issue to look at was to find the optimal time of the lockdown. But the key motivation of the other fiscal policies and things that came out in this interim, I would argue, was so that we can build capacity because we reacted too late in the West to this. We countries like Singapore, South Korea, when they started with their rapid contact tracing and immediate sort of surveillance and screening at the airports and things, they were used to epidemics happening. As a people, they know that, generally they know that if something like this goes down, well, these are the measures we need to relinquish some of our freedoms for the sake of controlling this. Over here, we weren't used to that, so we were very much reactionary. So in order to buy time to build the NHS Nightingale hospitals, to sort of readjust our to redeploy staff, to cancel elective procedures, to reduce to try and find capacity to deal with the increased cases, I would argue that was why the measures were brought in. And Junior was bringing up some great points about how there was a little bit of, there was a lack in clarity. But I mean, I'd say the lack in clarity, because how can you be clear about something as novel as this? We need to try what is best, what's worked in other countries, but what would suit our people and our community here.
Yeah,
but then the key thing that I was trying to get out was, yes, it was so that we can build capacity.
What I was just going to say was that, honestly, I just think that science has been adopted into an ideological system at the moment, and science is suffering. So I'm pretty sure that people are not happy about that, but I feel that is the case at the moment. That's my own point of view. But then Tatanda wanted to come in here. Yeah, so Tatanda, you can.
Yeah, I just wanted to, when you were talking about stimulus packages, I just wanted to say that stimulus packages, they've been used quite a lot of times, I think since that's what brought the Keynesian kind of economics into popularity, where if an economy sinks into when there's a Great Depression or there's a recession, the only way that you can bring or revive an economy is when you increase government spending. So you can either do that by cutting government taxes, or you incentivize, or you allocate money to people so that there's continual, you increase aggregate demand. So the ultimate objective is to make sure that aggregate demand is maintained at a certain level, such that businesses, people have money to spend, and also businesses have extra money to invest. So that alone can then, it's one of the mechanisms that can then help businesses to come out of this whole COVID disturbance. So, and then people also, on the other hand, will have money to spend. Because what you don't want is where you give tax rebates to companies to produce, and then people don't have enough money to spend. So you'd have to cover both sides, where the you incentivize firms to continue to invest, and then you also give people the amount, or you need to sustain their income to a level where they can also have money to spend. So it helps in bringing an economy out of a recession. And also maybe to relate the COVID pandemic to, like you said, political systems and stuff. I've been looking at the US, where I think the fight between a capitalist, purely capitalist, and purely socialist kind of political leaning has been, I think, due to the effect that the private sector has had on the ordinary person. Because I was watching a documentary where most of the McDonald's workers, they don't have sick leave allowances. So really, if you don't go to work because you're sick, you won't be paid for the time that you'll be at home.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at a situation where someone might suffer, or you contract COVID-19, and you are now forced to be at home. You're not working, and you're also not getting paid for being at home. So looking at the number of people that have remained or that haven't been working in this period, it's a staggering number. And also the number of people that have been going to work, because if they don't go to work, they're likely also not going to be paid, and there is no other way to earn money. So I think that's where the socialist kind of approach, or viewing of politics has gained popularity. Because in a time of crisis, we have tend to notice that capitalism really can't rescue the ordinary person, because what they are basically trying to do is to maximize profit and minimize costs. So really, you can't be in a position where you are paying someone when they are not working. You need to make sure that you capitalize every dollar that you can earn, or earn every dollar of profit that you can earn at any cost. because you also understand that demand is low. Most of the people are not working, and therefore you need to save every dollar that you can earn as profit. So in a time of crisis, really, I think people have come to a realization that the private sector, in as much as it's more efficient in allocating resources, in as much as it can be as innovative more than the government itself, and it can create solutions faster than the government. But really, at the end of it all, their objective is to maximize profit, not really to serve the interests of the ordinary person. And that then becomes a challenge, because we have people who are disadvantaged, those who are living with disabilities, those who are not working, the elderly living on pension schemes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So those people really, you know, the capitalist can't represent the interests of those people, especially in a time like this. So I think that's where I think the UK system, I would say, is done better than the US system, in that they've tried to cater the gap that the capitalist system has failed to. And but the US, you look at maybe the COVID-19 testing process also, people are being forced, or some of them you need to pay to be tested for COVID-19. So that becomes a challenge. Now, if it was the government doing that, in charge of that process, then everyone was going to be tested at zero cost. And then that will also ensure that containing the virus will make it easier for everyone. Whereas people are not working, and on top of that, you are supposed to pay for a COVID-19 test. That becomes a challenge for the system.
Yeah, so your first point that you made in relation to how economic principles just allow governments to respond the way they do, but I think it actually was in agreement with what Egor was saying about every government trying to survive. So doing the best you can to survive, not necessarily following a certain ideology. But I think why I have a concern is how currently we are being sort of vilifying capitalists. So for example, you heard of David Beckham's wife, her fashion line where she got her employees on furlough, she got her employees on furlough and she got a public backlash. Like, we have had people at Amazon, people still feeling like Amazon is not treating their staff very well. You gave an example of McDonald's side and all that. Yeah. But if it was a government who could have provided these free things that we are expecting, governments work with taxes. They get their revenues from taxes, especially in capitalist economies. They get their revenue from taxes. So, Egor, how do we criticize capitalism at this moment when it's actually capitalism that fuels government with the funds?
Yeah, I believe that we should be really proud that we can criticize something, that we can criticize everything all the time. And in my opinion, it's the best value of a society. So no matter how much we disagree with it, we should appreciate this. So, and I believe that that's a true identification that within the United Kingdom, within the United States, you have the society which can discuss, which can criticize, which can provide this vocal criticism without being punished. And I believe that that's why you have this criticism being present all the time. If it was the other way around, you would see a lot of criticism coming against leftism. So I believe that whenever government changes within a democratic setting, you would see the wave of criticism from any ideological perspective rising. So right now, as we know, that actually most governments around the world are following a more pro-market economy approach. And that's why you see the socialist criticism being all around the place. Well, 30 years ago, you had the criticism of the socialist government all over the world. Starting in the UK, there was Thatcher, there was Thatcherism. Going to the US, we had Ronald Reagan. And so if you go around the world, you will see that whatever ideology becomes supreme and the governing force, you will see this criticism mounting. So I would not confine it to the crisis resolution process itself. It only amplifies the criticism.
Mm. Okay, so maybe, Junior, you disagreed with someone's point, so maybe you can come in that, then we'll go back to some of the interventions. So I think I still want an answer to the UK government stimulus package that they've given out at the moment. Do we think that packet is just to support the idea of capitalism?
Or it was
just given because...
Basically, as you said, as you mentioned earlier, so first of all, I'm going to answer that. So I know many people might say, okay, this is a bad thing. No, it's not a bad thing. It is a good thing because if, as Tachinda mentioned before, if you don't give stimulus to the economy in the Keynesian economy model, businesses are going to shrink. So you will have a recession. So I believe the UK package was to limit the recession and to limit the impact of Brexit altogether. Because if that package was not given, so you will have the rate of unemployment going very, 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 very high, which will be very bad. And businesses will be closing. So that is the first thing I want to obviously clarify. So Boris Johnson and the UK government, they didn't just wake up one morning and say, now we're going to adopt some socialist policies and give everybody free money and business grants and put some people on furlough. No, as you said, they rely on science. They rely on the economist science, whereby if you do not give that stimulus to the economy, you will have a very bad recession, and then you will have Brexit, and altogether, the UK GDP will go very, very, very low. So then the second answer is what Tatenja mentioned earlier. Obviously, in terms of separating capitalism and socialism, he said that, use the USA as an example, that if you do not have socialism to intervene in terms of situation like this, capitalism won't be able to handle it, which means people that are, for example, or that are not helped by the government with some socialist policy won't be able to cope, because the very, very motive of the business, of a business, is profit and to limit cost. And I want everybody to think about this. For example, we're living here in the UK, whereby testing is very limited. And I will assure you, Kwame, that if testing was given to private company, by now, everybody would be tested. If testing was outsourced to private company to handle it, and we would be paying a minimum of money to buy testing, and it was not from the government, I'm pretty sure everybody will go online or we go to a place and they will buy testing kits and they will test themselves. And they will be waiting for the government for 7 weeks to say, now you can order testing kits from home. Then you order the testing kit. After 2 hours, there is no more testing kit. If this was given to private company, it will be sorted out.
I was just going to say that. So you're actually talking about how capitalism could have also advanced.
Yeah, in terms of responding to a situation like this, that is when you see the limit of socialism, because people need to understand what are the futures of socialism. Well, now we're talking about free speech. That's my third answer, which Igor mentioned. Now we are free to speak and to criticize. So why socialism had a little less success than capitalism? So we have to talk about success of socialism and the success of capitalism, because in a very strict socialist society, you don't have free speech, because the government is going to not allow you to have critics around that will criticize what they are doing. And then when you're talking about the economy and stimulus, if it was a socialist, pure socialist government, do you know what they do? Instead of giving stimulus to company and grants to business people to help them, they will try to buy the companies off and nationalize them. And that will create a problem. If it was a Jeremy Corbyn government in the UK, he would try to buy those off, those companies that are struggling, and it will nationalize them. That is the future of a socialist company. That is the future of a socialist government. That is what they will do. They will nationalize everything, take over everything, and then the economy will suffer.
Ego wants to come in, but I think Tatanda, you said something. You were talking about how you also disagree with what Junior is saying.
Yeah, I think there's I think the other problem is that probably we are failing to understand the role of the state in terms of capitalism or socialism. But what I wanted to say is that if you look at the US, they have allowed the private sector to chip in and in terms of and try to provide testing for COVID-19, but it has come at a huge price, you see. So we are taking. I'll give an example where in the US, if you get injured, it will probably cost you around $2,000 just for an ambulance ride to the hospital. So we are talking about such a capitalist system that that hinders people from actually not getting an ambulance ride to your hospital, where you prefer actually to use your own car to go to the hospital. So we are talking of such a capitalist system where if they can charge someone so much money just for an ambulance ride, how much are they charging for a COVID-19 testing kit? And by the way, we are dealing with a situation where we are dealing with an airborne disease where one person can infect 5 to 10 people in a day. So really, when we then start to attach a price to the efficient, let's say, of the market system, and then we say, let's allow the free market to distribute these testing kits, to develop these testing kits, they are going to try to make profit out of it, and they are going to try to maximize profit out of it at the expense of, one, the spread of the virus, and two, at the expense of the incomes of the people who are already not working. So that's where the challenge is. In a normal society where probably we're dealing with cancer, which is probably not, you know, not that contagious, then, yeah, I would say let's put it to the ends of the free market to distribute, to invent the solution to COVID-19. But with COVID-19, we are dealing with a time hindrance where we want to make sure that we test as many people as possible in the shortest possible time. So then when we allow the private sector to chip in, then we are going to have a challenge where they are going to charge the people for the testing kits. And what are the chances that most of the people will not afford to buy such testing kits? So that's where the challenge, why I'm saying, yes, it's good because we know the private sector is efficient in terms of, and it's also innovative. They can come up with solutions in the shortest possible time. But where we are dealing with a virus that is spreading so fast, we really can't then allow the private sector to purely determine or to purely produce the testing kits or probably the vaccines for such, because they are going to try to maximize profit out of it. But anyway, I think the most profitable business right now is when we deal with the health of individuals, because ultimately everyone wants to live long. So a lot of people are then forced in the hopes of surviving, they are then forced to part ways with a lot of money for greedy capitalists. So I feel like there should be a balance where if we are going to allow the private sector to invent things or to come up with solutions in a pandemic situation like this, then they should be doing it in the confines of the government regulation, where we are going to allow at the price of the testing kits, and also we are going to then incentivize them to produce them at a lower cost. But if we allow the private sector to purely produce them with their own research and development costs, with their own money, chances are high that those testing kits will be very expensive for the ordinary person.
Okay, so Fahad, you want to...
Just briefly, I want to stand in the middle of the two points you guys raised. I mean, yes, capitalism with its whole, with competition, innovation, efficiency, all of this, on the one hand, I respect that. On the other hand, yes, profitability. But now when, and chasing profits, big pharma and all of this. But the key, I would like to bring out the point, now time is of the essence and we need to do things as quickly as possible. Now, when the private sector took over the testing kits in the US, there was an issue of lack of quality control and then FDA bureaucracy that they had to deal with. And then the FDA did reduce some of its stringent quality control measures. But then you were coming out with test kits, which, yes, as Katanda said, that they were charging a lot for, were turning out with false negative results. So in the drive for getting, being the first one to launch out into the market, and the drive for trying to get all to sell as many as you can, you lose out on is this on the efficiency and quality control of the of the end product and the testing kit. And I know the US has been mentioned a lot. Another thing I want to throw out in there is we've got to remember that the US right now is in an election year, and a lot of rhetoric is going to be about socialism is a dirty word over there. And then if you can label Biden as a socialist, that's it. You know, you pander to your supporters, you know who you can pander to your existing support base. And so that sort of confounds the sort of labeling and rhetoric that's coming out over there. But ultimately, their unemployment rate right now is at about 20% or something when I last came across. So if they don't adopt some sort of welfare-centric, maybe some sort of welfare capitalism type thing, how are they going to manage? And add to that, the other complexity you have with the US is how much control does the federal side have over state legislation? Because you can't control a pandemic when you have certain states doing certain things, others doing, the people are being flippant and there are memes going out about this.
But
you can fly to, is it Michigan right now? Fly to Michigan, get a haircut, go back to your lockdown state. So
Ego, like I want to touch you on this one. Don't you also think that this is a time for governments to play their regulatory role well? So that if, let's say, the capitalist is coming in, like, Tatenda is saying, to what context too would we still hold the capitalist responsible for paying or remunerating, their staff for actually working within this risky environment? Because I see us saying that the capitalist shouldn't make profit in this moment. However, I think the one working too would expect something much more than what they were even receiving at the moment, because they think it's much more risky. So to what extent do we function in this situation, especially maybe if you were the president of the United States, like how would you function in this situation to make sure you satisfy both sides?
The way I see the regulatory role of the government is about how to make the economy work appropriately and help it deliver services at the highest possible level. And I guess the regulatory government only contradicts the libertarian vision of the society, which denies any state involvement whatsoever. While even some conservative governments, which are regularly labeled as neoliberals, try to introduce somewhat regulatory measures to anything. So I believe that the quality of this regulatory system is all about the quality of the political system itself. How well every actor within the society, whether these are labor unions, business representatives, politicians, farmers, teachers, everyone in the society, everyone who's involved, everyone who's a stakeholder, can contribute and bring a better response to bring the best quality out of the products and everything that is made. So coming on to the second question, could you just clarify it a bit?
Yeah, so I was saying that we are talking about how if capitalists step in, if responding to the COVID-19, like Gina talked about, they're going to be much more efficient. The testing is going to be like, you know, will skyrocket, and then things will be more under control. Tatenda talked about how that is actually going to make things much more expensive, and hence we didn't be able to help us in tackling this whole pandemic as efficient and as fast as we want it to be.
Yeah.
But my question is that, first, don't you think that this is the time that governments rather should be playing their regulatory work well? Because Fahad was talking about how in the US, most capitalists are not actually been meeting the regulatory requirements and everything. Isn't that supposed to be the government's role? Why should that be a reason for us to say that, you know, this is actually the reason why capitalism isn't actually the best ideology to be using in responding to the situation?
So in my mind, regulatory system should work well all the time, no matter when the crisis comes. So it's the question of how the measures and the regulations of the government were put in place, either by a federal or local body. So I guess we should leave it aside, and it's a thing for a different discussion, covering the quality of the political system and how it works. So it's a very complex thing. We need another 2 hours for that.
So I think that we'll come back to our next question.
When it comes to capitalists, I believe it always gets we should always judge different people by their actions. So some capitalists, some business owners may spend a lot of their money to do what it takes to fight the pandemic. They may create funds, they may create their own ventures, they may do a lot of useful things that will help the society. Well, on the other hand, we'll have these evil capitalists, those who care about profits. In my mind, they're likely to not even tell anyone about the pandemic.
But shouldn't the capitalists think about profits? Like, it's when the people that depends on them expect remuneration.
Whenever we have, every business operates not in the market, but in the society. And when the business feels the responsibility for its staff, for everyone around, then it should work appropriately. Yeah, most of the times we see big cases like Amazon and McDonald's who don't care about their staff at all. I think that we need to understand that we should not qualify everyone who owns a business as an evil capitalist who tries to destroy the livelihoods for the sake of profit. We may highlight those who do badly, and our role as a society, as a civil society, is to do just that.
And I'm thinking that society will always be very subjective in their criticism of people. So moments that maybe you get a particular pandemic and we are using a pandemic to define how evil a particular capitalist is, I feel like that one too is not really fair. But then let's move on to the next topic. I just wanted us to demystify the stimulus package that UK government gave. Okay, so my question is, do we think that they gave it because they wanted to still allow capitalism to thrive? Because I realized that most of the packages were going to businesses to support their staff, to make sure they don't lay the staff off and all that. Or do you think it was just given because they just really wanted people to survive? But if that is the case, then why is it just up to October? Junior, I'll come in.
Yeah, obviously commenting on that again, the UK system is already a welfare state system. So those people that are not working are already receiving benefits from the government. So whether it's a pandemic or not pandemic, they're still going to receive the money. So the issue here now was because you can't go to work, or maybe because your employer might be suffering the impact of COVID-19 and they might lay you off. So that is when the government now comes in and said, okay, we're going to help these people, we're going to help these businesses to make sure that people don't get laid off. And even though they are at home, they are on furlough, they should still continue to receive these incentives from us. And as well, we help businesses. So that is obviously the capitalism thinking in a way of a little bit of a socialism thinking, as a Katenda put it, using the Keynesian intervention to prevent a big recession. But then what happened is that we still need to make sure that we don't use this COVID-19 to say, okay, now a more socialist approach globally will be better. So Obama has already criticized the global response, because right now every country is thinking of himself. So UK is thinking of themselves, USA, Germany, China, other European countries, everyone is thinking for themselves. So that global connection, socialism, attitude that was there many years ago is simply gone. Now every government wants to prove themselves to be trustworthy to their people and to protect their citizens. And then we need to think about what causes COVID-19 in the first place. Before, 10 years ago, we were talking about continental epidemics. We're talking about countries' epidemic. So because of this interconnection we are having today, because of this social interconnection we are having today, that is what makes it a pandemic. That is what makes it worse in that first place. Because if you don't have this slamming of nationalism, so if you are patriotic, I'm not trying to defend Donald Trump. Don't get me wrong. But if you are a politician like Donald Trump or maybe Boris Johnson, I'm not trying to defend them. I'm not trying to defend their behaviors. I'm not trying to support them. But I'm just using it as an example to prove my point. So if, for example, you are trying to be a little bit nationalist and patriotic and to fend for your countrymen first, which means to put your country, your citizens first. Globally, you have been like criticized a lot. But now that we're in a situation where these people that a few months ago, they were all for global unity and overall, where are they right now? They are all thinking about their country. And to trust me, if more countries were less dependent on China and they were more independent and their economic structure was stronger, their response to pandemic would have been better. That is another point. Germany's response was good because their infrastructure, their economy was strong. So that is how they were doing.
Yeah. And, so let's say, Junior, coming in here, so let's come back to the ideological drive here in terms of the stimulus package that it is given. So I just wanted to understand that the UK's government, like you're saying, they are welfare states and everything. So, but then when you look at the package that they gave, do you think that the whole sense behind that, was it just to give it out? Because already if they're in the welfare package, then it means people already fend for. If you lose your job, you can get unemployment benefits and all those kind of things. But why do you think they still gave out? So maybe Fahad, you can come. Why do you think they still gave out that stimulus package?
Because it's obviously to protect the economy. And as you said, it is the October, because for you to continue this, stimulus under this package, it's not sustainable in the long term. So the most appropriate way is to make sure that it is short term. Let's protect these people for this, for this period. And then later, let us get them back immediately to work, because you have to protect the economy. You have to protect jobs, because if these people lose this job and then they all apply for benefit, what will happen is that their benefit is going to be a long term. So there will be high rate of unemployment, recession, and obviously, so it was better to make sure that you create this package to help the economy. So my answer to that question is the UK package, it is to help the economy rather than a socialist incentive thing to not allow people, obviously to help people. It was more to help the economy, to make sure people don't lose their job and businesses don't go down.
Okay, so Fahad, you wanted to...
I would just to add to what Junior said, I'd say that this package was in the medium to long-term sense, although there were criticisms coming out, Boris wants us all to go back to work so we can make him and his cronies money and all of this, that level of meme level. I mean, I've been loving the meme content. I mean, I need to find some sense of humor out of this lockdown period. But what I would say is the most compassionate thing we can do is try and, as Junior is saying, try and get back to status, as close to status quo and levels of production as quickly as we can. Because in the last quarter, the UK economy shrunk by 2%. Now, bearing in mind that lockdown only happened in the last week of March, that 2% drop only reflects that week. We don't know how our economy is going to be affected by all of April coming in. And we also need to remember that the only reason we survived the 2008, well, I say survive, you can make your own conclusion from that, but the only way we survived that was through bailouts and financial injections and all of this. This is a bubble that's growing. And unfortunately, the pinprick is COVID. So I would say that the motivation is medium to long-term survival, because if we didn't do this, then people in the gig economy and the people on the breadlines and the use of food banks and all of this will get worse. So even though immediately it looks like this is a callous move, people, construction sites are still open. I think Junior mentioned that, or HS2 work and all of this. I would say these are desperate attempts to make sure we can come back from this. Hopefully we take the best from both worlds when we come back, the best of social welfare policies, maybe the elements from the Nordic system perhaps, and the best bits of capitalism and innovation and industry and entrepreneurship, but then have that level of compassion so we take care of those who are, like a moment like this, because at a time of crisis like now, is when the flaws in your system come out.
Okay, so Ego will come in, and then Tatanda, then we'll start to finalize and sort of conclude on our topic. So I think if you are concluding, the question I just want to ask is that should the pandemic be like, you know, a tool for validating a particular political ideology? That would be like the very final question. So Ego, please, you can come in, then Tatanda will give their his last comment as well.
The only ideology that the current crisis validates is the trust in your rationalism and trust in science. So in trust, by trusting these simple things, which shouldn't have any ideological background behind them, is the way you deal with the crisis. So definitely there will be zealots pursuing either a rightist or a leftist vision. And in their interest, it may be good to try the science, but in real life, whether you're a right-wing politician or a left-wing politician, you should understand that in times like this, you should address experts, you should address those who know how to do this and can lead the nation in fighting the virus. So you as a leader should only be responsible for finding and building the bridge between the government and the scientific community.
Oh. I think you've actually been used it to answer our last question. So Tatanda, so the same thing. Do you think that COVID-19 should be used as a tool to validate a particular political ideology?
So what I wanted to say is that, no, I don't think it should validate a certain political ideology. But I just feel like we have already noted that we have different governments which operate under different political or ideological lenience or biases. So that's not likely to change anytime soon. So I think then this kind of pandemic should then educate the governments as to how best should they tackle such situations. Is there any need for them to change or alter certain regulatory frameworks that they had implemented, depending on the political or the ideological path they follow? So I think then, ultimately, it should serve or it should inform governments in the best way possible to address pandemics and also make sure that the livelihoods of the people in the country that they are leading, they are not affected so much. So I just feel like a pandemic should just serve as a way to educate us on how we can best improve our governance systems, no matter what ideological path that governance system follows.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you. So, Junior.
I agree with what he said. So this pandemic, COVID-19, should be a lesson for the whole world, for the global community. I do disagree with Ego, unfortunately, because the science can be biased, the science can be politicalized. So this COVID-19 has proved it, because we had two types of science coming out, and the lockdown was more supported by the left-leaning socialist scientist community and political parties and political government, whereas they had immunity and going back to work immediately and to make sure the COVID-19 is sustainable in the long term was supported by more conservative and more right-leaning government. But then that has proved my point again, because recently the World Health Organization has recognized Sweden as a model to follow for the future of COVID-19. They said that Sweden model will be the new normal. And we all know that 4 weeks ago, when all this thing started, 5 weeks or 7 weeks ago, when all these things started in Europe, Sweden was heavily criticized for not locking down their country. And the first model of the UK was to follow herd immunity, and based on recent, further research, and obviously then the government recognized that it is better to go on a full lockdown because of the type of the country we are, because obviously Sweden is less populated than the UK. There are differences in habits and in the terms of population, so it would have had a more huge impact. So science can be a politics. Science can be politicalized. Science cannot always be the best way to follow, or can always be correct. On the conclusion side, I would say that COVID-19 shouldn't be used, as Tantida said, to kind of validate any right-wing government or to validate any left-wing government. So COVID-19 should be a lesson to everybody, as it should be something of a one-time that just happened, and it shouldn't repeat itself again in the future, because many people have died, many people have lost their job, many people are suffering, and the economy is going to suffer, government is going to suffer, the global unity is already suffering from it, because now globally countries are less coming together, so are less united. So all these things should be put in a package for everybody to learn from.
Yeah.
And I disagree with those that are using it to slam one type of government and to criticize the other one, or to say that we would have done better. Nobody know how it could have been if it was a different type of a government, but we should all be like, it shouldn't happen again, and we should try to do best next time. So yeah, that is my conclusion.
Okay, good. So Fahad.
I'd say that it's not science's fault that it's being politicized. And we are living in a post-truth world. And it is very easy to debate facts as if facts have become an opinion. Now, so Junior did bring about two studies that were used, two different models with a herd immunity lockdown. What I would say is, just like we've discovered today, capitalism and socialism in practice is a spectrum. Likewise, so is science. Good science versus bad science, peer-reviewed, evidence-based, repeated science versus an obscure study someone did somewhere down the road. Even though for the average person like us, it all seems like science and we can market it as such, but some study that had a sample size of 10 isn't the same science as something that's been done on a continental level. I also agree with what the panel have said about it doesn't legitimize one or the other. What it shows is the flaws in our respective systems. But what I'd like to say is the biggest thing it has shown me, at least on a personal level, is that this sense of Western supremacy in our ideologies and perspectives still persists, because what frustrated me the most has been, since January, we could see how it was affecting in the Far East, how it was spreading around Taiwan, South Korea, Singapore, the measures that they were doing. Yet we were here thinking, it's their problem. They had SARS. It's not going to come around here. It's a faraway exotic disease that will never come down and affect us. So that, from the political sphere, was quite naive, even though from the science sphere they weren't getting the exposure, but they were saying, hey guys, watch out for this. This could be big. This could really mess us over. And finally, the final thing I'd like to say is, it's also highlighted to me, at least, how disjointed global efforts are at dealing with these kind of situations. We like to quote the World Health Organization as if they are some bastion of public health policy, but they're only there to recommend things. Ultimately, it's up to the state, the individual nation, to decide which of their recommendations to implement, which of their guidelines to follow. And like you, the panel was saying that hopefully every nation is fending for themselves. I'd say rightly so. In a time of crisis, you secure your home first. You make sure your door is locked and your windows are locked before you decide on what's happening in your neighborhood. I would hope on the other side of this, we can be in a position where we can take a more global overview on these things and be a bit more prepared. Not like opposites, Operation Cygnus it was, and learn from those lessons, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also totally agree. I think that a lot of things have been politicized too much. I think the youth coming too has been polluted too much. So instead of we being the champions of, you know, following facts, being more realistic and rational, we are also understanding things from the political side of things. And I mean, that is why we are having this discussion. And I'm very happy that the five of us have all agreed that this actually isn't the time to use COVID-19 to validate a particular ideology or to, you know, put a rubber stamp on a particular party, because you feel they could have, per the ideology, provided a better solution to this. I also agree that we looked at how if the capitalism and the socialist system, where their vision were working hand in hand within this situation, efficiency would have been good. We could have also been very faster and things might have been cheaper or free. It all depends on how we use the two together. But like if you are at both ends of the spectrum, it becomes extremely very hard to do this. So I'm very happy at the end of this discussion, we've been able to agree that yes, it doesn't validate any of the two. We should just be rational. So yeah, guys, thank you very much for, you know, joining us in the show. I'm pretty sure we've all enjoyed ourselves. I like the fact that we're disagreeing with each other, but like Egor said, that's the beauty of society at the moment, the fact that we can freely disagree and still we came back onto an agreement. So thanks very much for Egor. You called him from Russia. That is really good. Yeah, thank you to our Nigerian brother, Junior, Tatanda from Zimbabwe, Fahad Bangladesh, and Kwame from Ghana. As you can see, my Ghana flag is there.
representing.
Yeah. So and the rest that asks questions, thank you very much. I hope we're able to answer most of your questions. The panel can still come in there and reply to some of the questions that we could not maybe explicitly give an answer to. Yeah, so thank you very much for joining us. Join us same time next week, Thursday, at 5:30, as we take on another.
Invite your friends.
Invite your friends, everybody, to join in. Then, we'll just take you on this. So,
I'm just, this is International Nurses Day this week. So, I want to give a shout out to all the year two, year three nurses in our uni and the unions in the Greater Manchester area for being so resilient and putting up with all the changes that we're having and going out into the front line. So, I salute them.
That's true. I think we have to just salute our frontline workers, not just even the health workers. We are talking about the postmasters, the garbage collectors. All of them have been really putting their life on the line for this. So all our thanks goes to all of them. Thank you very much. It's been a wonderful show. So again, my name is Kwame. I'm the host for Ginsecond Radio. We've moved Facebook on live. So join us next week, 5:30 again, for another awesome discussion. And be following us on the page to know the topic that we're going to discuss for next week, and invite your friends to be there. So thank you very much.